Spring dimes for aspiring fall quarterbacks. This is the Pick Six podcast. I'm Evan Bland, along with Tom Chattel, and today our man of mystery with no camera, Sam McEwen. We're going to be talking some spring football today, Nebraska football, about halfway through their series of workouts this spring. We're going to get into plenty of what we saw, the quarterback battle, what Matt Rhule said coming out of the coaches' clinic. We have sort of a Shades of Scott Frost talk from something Lincoln Riley said on the West Coast. And we'll probably talk a little bit of baseball, too. How are you guys all doing this morning?
Good. Do you write that stuff out before you start?
Nope.
Something about the dimes and the fall and
just off the cuff, man.
It's poetic.
That's why I call him the Silver Tongue. And today I'm a disembodied voice. So.
Yeah, it's just a black screen for Sam today.
Speaking to you from beyond the veil, as they say in Harry Potter.
You got some real like Wizard of Oz energy going there.
Yeah. I'm good, Evan. I'm good. I love the weather. Man, I've loved the turn in the weather. It's Masters Week. That has nothing to do with Nebraska football, but it's like my second favorite golf week of the year. So it's pretty sweet stuff. It's gonna be a lot of fun. Good week, good sports, kind of quiet week with Nebraska, but we've got a few things to talk about.
We do, yeah. It's always interesting. Spring ball starts and it's cold, and by the end, it's nice. You turn that corner on the northwest part of Memorial Stadium, and it goes from just like Arctic winds to actually pretty pleasant by the end of the year. So we took that walk earlier this week, had a little chance to see some of the open practice, and it was different than most of what we've seen as media members. They let us in a few times a year for, 15, 20 minutes. And usually what we see is individual workouts, drills, position drills, things of that nature. It was different in this case because we actually got to go in and see something close to a live period. They didn't tackle to the ground, but quarterbacks were running live offenses and defenses were playing the other side. Sam, what did you take away from that little glimpse into what Nebraska football was working toward?
So initially what I thought was really interesting, Evan, is that, okay, so we're standing outside the practice facility, and for a minute there, they're not going to let us in.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were like, oh, no. And they kind of closed the doors, right? And we have to step back. And then I think what happened was Matt Rhule's like, no, let them in for whatever reason. And so each quarterback got a drive, Harburg, Kalen, and Raiola, in that order. And it was just kind of like a 2-minute drive, obviously, just moving the football down the field, mostly passes, a couple of runs, mostly passes. Pretty much the same group of receivers for each quarterback. Like each one of them was working with Jamal Banks and Isaiah Nayor and Jalen Lloyd and Ja'Cory Barney. Malachi Coleman wasn't in the drill because he's still got the green jersey on. There were a few other guys that were running in there. Different offensive lines and different defenses. And so Harburg did fine. Like I was kind of walking to the spot where I wanted to watch the whole thing from, which was in the corner of the end zone that they were moving toward. I was the only person who was down there. You, I think, were on the other sideline. And so I kind of saw a little bit of that drive, and Harburg's okay. I think he did okay. And then Kalen comes on, and Danny Kalen was really good. Yeah. He threw three really good passes, two of which were really, really good. One was an over route to Ja'Cory Barney on a play action fake. Barney got behind the defense, but it was a good throw. It was fit between two defenders. And then basically a go route. It wasn't a fade ball. It was a go route, about a 22-yard go route, something like that, to Nayor, who caught the ball about 3 feet before he got to the back line, and it was fit right in. It was a great throw. It was a really, really good throw. And so that was a touchdown. That was the only touchdown I think that I saw. And then Raiola comes on, and Raiola had a few moments. He didn't get as good a protection from his offensive line as Kalen did from his. And Raiola's got a lot of different arm slots and arm angles from which he throws. And there's a lot of different things he can do in the pocket to make a throw possible. I think he probably threw two passes that he would want back. One of them was just off the mark, but the other one probably should have been picked off. It was dropped by DeAndre Barnes. And it was one of those deals where it was probably only Raiola out of the three guys could have actually made the throw because he had to kind of contort his body and throw it in a certain way to make the pass, but he shouldn't have thrown the pass. Just because you can make it doesn't mean you should. The ball was dropped. It's one of those examples where like Raiola is so athletic and so gifted that he can probably do some things that the other guys can't do, but you got to remember there's a defense. So I thought he did some good things too. It's just that Kalen probably threw the two best overall passes. And I think there's a presumption. And I went to, the YouTube comments on our video from yesterday, Evan, and somebody literally said it's a fake competition that Raiola has already won the quarterback battle. And that all of everything that transpires from here is fake. Like they're not really competing. Everybody knows Raiola is going to be the quarterback. And from what I saw yesterday, I don't think it's a fake anything. I think they're competing. And if, Kalen had in that particular drill, the better of it. And that's the drill we got to watch. And so, we're reporting faithfully what occurred.
Tom, I know you weren't there, but from what you've seen or heard, does 5 minutes of practice that the media happens to see make that conversation at the quarterback position more interesting?
Well, I think it's wide open, but I mean, these are the kind of quarterbacks that you can see that from either one of them any day. So there's no surprise there. It doesn't mean one guy's ahead or the other guy's not. It just means that they're both capable. So that's one snapshot of one little thing in practice you see. So. That's a good thing for Nebraska. They've got two guys that are going to be really good. So, I wish we get to the point where they could have one open practice a week, and we're not worried about what's going to be seen or, any of that stuff that, Yeah, Nebraska's going to run this offense. They always run this offense. They always do this. They always do that. And just to open up practice. I'll go back to the days when we used to have Saturday scrimmages were in the stadium and they were open. They were open to the public. You'd get a pretty good crowd there Saturday afternoon. And we'd sit up in the press box and somebody would keep stats and it was no big deal. One time Barry Switzer was asked if he spied on Nebraska. And he goes, spy? He goes, I know what they're going to run. I just can't stop it. So I wish we get to the point where we know what they're going to do. Let us watch for a whole practice. So I understand we're not there yet, and maybe with social media today, we'll never be there. So who knows?
Sam,
Yeah, I think.
I'm curious because like we talk when we talk about like the running back position, we talk about how, man, wouldn't it be nice if there was that guy who stood out and pulled away from the pack, and Nebraska needs that feature guy. And we kind of go the other way with the quarterback, where there's sort of this assumption that maybe it's Raiola, and now that it's close, it's like it feels like it's a good thing. Like, well, Nebraska is going to need its backup. It needs some quality depth at that position. Is that position specific, do you think, or are we kind of having both ends of the argument there when we say, hey, we want that guy to emerge at running back, but hey, it's a good thing at quarterback if there's competition.
Well, if Nebraska had Josh Jacobs and Derrick Henry in the same backfield, I'd be fine with two. I think the way that, or it was Ameer Abdullah and Rex Burkhead, that's fine. It's more an issue of that Nebraska doesn't have one. Like if they had three and they had three elite guys, that's fine. I think it's that the situation they've had there is outside of Devine in 2018, who had to emerge and didn't emerge until like game four or five, they really haven't had a player who just took it and ran with it. So, and Maurice Washington, granted. But you know, there's just circumstances there where I think that's more my point. Like, yes, I think it'd be good if a guy emerged because the fact that they have to go with a committee, and I already know who's on the committee, is the issue. So there was a time and place in Nebraska football history, and Tom remembers it well, where the fifth string running back at Nebraska would have started at maybe six of the other Big Eight schools. And that's not an exaggeration. I think Jay Sims was the fifth string running back in 1995, and he probably would have started at most of the other schools in the Big Eight. I think that was the last year of the Big Eight. And so, you know, that those kind of things can happen. Or, you know, there was a time when Barry Sanders and Thurman Thomas were in the same backfield at Oklahoma State. It's the greatest backfield of all time, probably. And Barry Sanders barely played at that role. He was an All-American as a kick returner. So yeah, it's great if you have two players like that. I think the question is Nebraska doesn't have one. At the quarterback position, I think you know, you definitely want to have two players that are going to compete and can really push each other. You'd love to have that scenario. Nebraska hasn't had that scenario very often in its history at the quarterback position. Obviously, they had that when they enjoyed the Frazier situation. But you know, I think I would just say that Rayola has a lot of pressure put on him to come here and kind of be the guy right away. And I'm betting that, and I've watched just about every available video of Rayola that I can watch. I'm betting a lot of fans haven't watched a lot of that stuff, and they haven't watched much of Kalen, and they're just going based on what they've heard and recruiting rankings. And I'm just saying that, like, Rayola's got a unique skill set. He's talented for sure. At the same time, Danny Kalen's got an Elite 11 skill set too. It's not like Danny Kalen went out to the Elite 11 and they're like, well, since he's committed to Nebraska, let's just put him on the Elite 11. No, I mean, that doesn't happen like that. So he went out there and he competed and he did well and he made it. And so, like, he's not chopped liver coming here. And then last his senior year at Bellevue West, I think, you know, he didn't have as much protection from his line. There were injuries among his receivers. And so I think that soured people a little bit, but it didn't sour me. I think he still has he's an incredible skill set, and he has the ability to do some really special things as a quarterback. And he was able to show that on Tuesday. I don't know that that's going to keep up. And he's not a runner. Like, he's not going to run around all over the place, but if you give him time and you give him a pocket, I think Danny Kalen can do some damage, as can Rayola. I think Rayola is more of an off-platform thrower, as they say. He can do all kinds of stuff with his arm because it's so strong. You just gotta recognize that you're in college now and not in high school, and some of those angles just aren't open. And I'm sure he'll figure that out as time goes on.
So what else for you guys? So like we're a couple weeks away from the spring game, and this seems to be kind of the point every year where maybe the excitement of the practices starts to wear off a little bit. You kind of have a little bit of a sense of how the positions are breaking down. Has there been anything in this last week, whether it's what you saw or what you've heard from Matt Rhule, that piqued your interest, that maybe took sort of your observations of the spring in a direction that you didn't expect?
Oh, not really. I mean, and again, I wasn't able to get on there the other day, but there was a comment that Rhule had about Ty Robinson, I think, being able to like coach practice or be, you know, the leadership. I mean, this is what I talked about before spring. Who are the leaders who are going to emerge that are going to carry this team forward. It's we're at the point now. Okay, the coaches have installed the system, the offense, defense, the culture, everything they want to be done. Now it's got to be a players' team. The players have to own the team now. It's their turn to take what they've been taught and go forward. And really, that's when you start to win. that's when things begin to click, when the players take over. And I'm curious, are these players ready to do that this spring? And it sounds like they are. And I pointed to Ty Robinson is one of those guys who's been around and came back because he wanted to be part of it. He's a guy who could do that, and he's on defense. So, but he's gonna have a large voice, and I was happy to hear that. So yeah, I guess that probably stood out.
For me, Evan, it's Evan Cooper's comments yesterday about Malcolm Hartsock focusing on safety, which tells me they feel pretty good about the corner spot, or good enough that they don't feel like Hartsock has to play there in spring. That they're going to test out some of the corners that they have and who might play opposite Tommy Hill, whether it's Bly Hill or it's, I think Mario Buford's going to push to play a lot. That's not all that surprising given what he did in high school. Whether it's him or Mario Buford or Barnes or Charles, clearly Cooper's able to, get some of these guys to come over to his side of the ball. And one of the reasons I think they were able to do that is move Barnes and Charles and Bryce Turner and these guys is because I think they feel like they got some pretty good young receivers, and they liked Ja'Cory Barney, who made a play in the little spot that we saw. And I think they like Hall and Demetrius Bell and Jalen Lloyd's making plays every day, from what I've heard. So, on the edges of the field, I think they're getting better. I think the receiver spot's really important to them. I think that group's gotta get better. I think that's been true now for a couple of years. So, those are areas that I'm watching. Is running backs, receivers, and we haven't heard much about the running backs yet. We just haven't. What we've heard so far is guys are hurt and we're waiting for guys to come back. There's that. Dowdell looks the part. I will say that. And he's actually taller and leaner than Gabe Irvin. And that's interesting to me. So he looks like he doesn't necessarily look like a true power back. He looks like a long strider. So it'll be interesting to watch him run play. Those are probably the things that jump out. We're not hearing a ton about any other tight ends other than Fedoni at this point. Those are things that I guess I'm listening for. Everybody knows what they're going to be at on the defensive line. They're going to have one of the best defensive lines in the country. They might have a top five D line in the country. And so they're probably not going to talk much about it because they kind of know what they have there. They're not going to sit there and toot their own horn about it. They're more focused on which positions need to get better. And I think the ones that I'm listening about are the ones I just rattled off.
I'm always impressed too how Matt Rhule can take a question and take it in a different direction. Like the one thing that stood out to me, I mean, he talked with media for like more than 20 minutes on Saturday. And typically those are a little bit of shorter sessions, but he was asked toward the end about how the adjustment period was going with Glenn Thomas, the quarterback's coach, into their system, what they're doing offensively. And he spent the next minute listing off all of his support staff from strength training to nutrition to everything else, and saying like how he was more comfortable with the setup than he's been. And he pointed out, hey, Glenn Thomas was with him at Temple at Baylor in a similar situation to what they have now with Marcus Satterfield as well. And it just seems like they're settling in for. Like they're just comfortable with who they are and what they are. And like it feels like this is not one of those situations where it takes a coach a year to acclimate or you're trying to blend philosophies. Like it's just seemed like it's been very seamless. Matt Rhule says it frees him up to think more big picture with his team, to have more one-on-ones with players. I don't know. Do you guys get that sense too? Like it's there's the urgency that they talk about, but there's also like this identity thing that how many years have we talked about on this podcast about like who is Nebraska? What does it want to be? It kind of feels like the calm this spring maybe is the root of that taking off.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't know what Tom thinks about that. Yeah, I think that's certainly fair. I mean, they're spending enough money and they got enough staff there for sure. That when I listened to him talk about all the staff and walking the halls, you know what I thought of? I thought of the scene in Casino where Robert De Niro's character goes into the kitchen and he opens up the blueberry muffin and he says, "I want the exact same number of blueberries in each muffin." And I'm like, Matt Rhule is that guy. Like, he wants everything to be just so. And if you've got the staff to pull it off, you can do it. I think he kind of does. I think he's got, all the king's horses and all the king's men. So I think everything's going really well down there. Now it's just about the football. And as Tom can attest, there's been many years where there was enough obstacles in that program where they couldn't make it about the football. Like, there was, cold wars between Steve Peterson and Frank Solich or whatever, stuff I wasn't around for. But it does feel like they don't have any cold wars right now, and they're able to just focus on the football.
Yeah, I mean, there were plenty of years where the muffins didn't have any blueberries in them. I mean, it was like nobody cared, So, yeah, I mean, you go down to how your offensive linemen, where they place their hands, every play, where they how they move their feet, how receivers run a route. Every single time, same way, how they plant their feet, how they do that, that's what we're talking about here. Those are the blueberries. They forgot how to do it. They've just plain forgot how to care about details. And so, yeah, Sam Rothstein, walking into that kitchen, that's rule. Absolutely. Now, do they have a room where they have the hammer and they'll break some guy's hand with the hammer? Do they have that room? I mean, I'm telling you,
No.
but that was my favorite scene. You can have the money or you can have the hammer. I'll take the money or whatever it was. It was you can have the hammer and the money. Or you can get out of here. I'll be leaving now, sir. So,
Right. Yeah.
yeah, it was. Anyway, yeah, they've forgotten how to do the blueberries, and I love that.
Okay, so this is a good transition to something that Lincoln Riley said recently. USC's head coach, they're transitioning from the now defunct Pac-12 into the Big Ten, and it comes on our radar a little bit because there's some Scott Frost energy to what he's saying about this transition to the Big Ten, and it contrasts, I think, with what we're just talking about with Matt Rhule, where he's been open about saying, look, it was helpful to go through the Big Ten for a year to see what it takes to win. It's a windier league. It's a colder league. It's different than trying to win in whatever elements are in Texas or in Temple. So I just want to read a couple things that Lincoln Riley said and get your guys' reaction. Is this closer to Scott Frost or is this, more of a nothing burger? He said, I mean, I know it's a big story on the outside, the move to the Big Ten. I get it. I know we're playing some different people and there'll be some different things schematically and all that. But I mean, I feel like it gets made out in the media that the Big Ten is some wildly different deal. Like, it's football. So a couple of teams play with one more tight end. Big deal. And then he goes on later on to say, it's not like an, oh my God, we're going to the Big Ten. We have to scrap the plans and start this. It's not to that extent. Do you guys think, is he right in sort of sticking to the football aspect, or does he underestimate the transition that USC is going to make, much like the transition that Nebraska made more than a decade ago?
Well, I think it's a lot different, than what Scott said. Scott, Nebraska hadn't, and to be fair, Mike Riley won nine games a second year, but Nebraska wasn't physical. I mean, what I think he's talking about is he's right in that it's not about the second tight end. It's about how the Big Ten plays. It's It's about the blueberries, the damn blueberries. Okay, we're back to blueberries. It's about what the details. The Big Ten does details better than just about anybody. Maybe the SEC, you don't have to have the details because you overwhelm you everybody with incredible talent and speed, and nothing makes up a mistake or makes up for a mistake like speed and talent. But the Big Ten is about the way you play football. And I think, you know, Nebraska wasn't doing any of that when they came into the Big Ten. They were surprised by things. I was surprised by things that I saw. The Big Ten has a reputation of, oh yeah, boring, and they lumber around, and they're, you know, there's not a lot of eye-popping talent other than Ohio State, but they play really good football. And so, but so does Oregon, so does Washington with under Kalen DeBoer. And, you know, USC is defense has been, you know, whatever, and UCLA has certainly been a little up and down. But these programs are capable of getting players in a hurry. There's going to be an adjustment on both ends. And I think the difference is with than what Nebraska and Frost were doing and saying is that there's four of them now. There was just one of Nebraska coming in. Now there's four of these guys, and they're all capable of bringing in speed the Big Ten hasn't seen other than Ohio State. They, you know, Oregon knows how to, they play physical, so does Washington. And USC, when they care about defense and offensive line, they play physical too. So I think the difference is there might even be an adjustment on both sides. But the big adjustment is going to be that there's a playoff that everybody wants to get in, and the Rose Bowl doesn't matter like it used to.
I think that Lincoln Riley's comments are more benign than Scott Frost, probably because, you know, Scott Frost never really had a passive aggressive moment in his comments. Like, he, I don't know that he's capable of that. He's kind of unfiltered that way. And Lincoln Riley is notoriously passive aggressive in the way that he talks. So as I read those comments, I think what he's saying to some degree is, you know, we're not going to have to change that much. It's not that different. And I just don't think he probably knows yet what that experience is going to be like. And they'll just have to learn it and go through it. Because I think part of what happens, and this is not, I do think USC can handle it, to be clear. I mean, I think they've got enough players to be able to go through it and not just get, you know, squashed completely. But, you know, they drew a tough schedule. They gave this to themselves when they decided it'd be a neat idea to play LSU and Notre Dame in their non-conference schedule. I don't know why they did that, but they did. And their schedule's tough. I mean, it's challenging. They have to travel to Michigan, they have to travel to Minnesota, they have to travel to Maryland. Those are long flights. Much longer than going to Arizona State. So, and those are some sausage ball teams that I just rattled off. I guarantee USC hasn't played a team like Michigan. They just haven't. That's going to put that many tight ends out there. They haven't played a team like Minnesota. Now, are they going to beat Minnesota? I think so. I do. But Minnesota, the way they play, is just going to wear on you. You know, they're going to put five guys out there who are 340. Their tight end's going to be 285. They might put a second tight end out there who's 275, and then they're just going to lean on you. Now, they may not beat you, but it's going to take a physical toll. And then the next week, they got to play Penn State. And then the next week, they got to go out to Maryland. Like, all that stuff accumulates over time. And so I think that's the thing that USC will have to experience. UCLA is going to have to experience it too. I do agree with Tom. I think Oregon is the team that can withstand it. Because Oregon had a coach and Mario Cristobal that was developing that anyway. And then Dan Lanning wants to make Oregon like an SEC team. And so I think physically speaking, I don't, I mean, I think Lanning still has room to grow as a game day coach and a day in, day out coach, because at the end of the day, lost three times to Kalen DeBoer, who didn't have as much talent as he did. But he's built a culture there, and they're physical as hell. They had a game where they had to go play Liberty in the bowl game, and I know Liberty's not anywhere on the same level as Oregon, but a lot of times in those games, the teams go in and they just kind of blase and like, eh, we'll win by 7 or whatever. USC, for example, lost to Tulane, and Oregon crushed Liberty because physically they were just dominant. They were a superior team. So I do think that Riley's going to have to figure that out. They'll learn it. When he was at Oklahoma, I think the Big 12's got some really good defenses in it, but the culture is just different. The culture in the Big 12 is just a different culture than the Big 10, and he'll experience it. I'm really intrigued. I'm doing kind of like a, I'm going through all the Big Ten teams. I'm doing a recap of his team this week in spring, and I'm really intrigued to see the kind of team that they're able to put out on the field because, they had the most talented quarterback in America last year, and they went 7-5. So usually, when you have that good of a player as your quarterback, you don't go 7-5. So something didn't go right last year, and I think they're trying to correct it.
And you mentioned Oregon too. I'm trying to think of a time when a team made as high profile of a league change as Oregon is about to do, and was considered a favorite, right? Like it's going to be them and Ohio State. You would think atop the league. Would that be sort of in a lot of ways unprecedented if Oregon's able to just seamlessly make this transition from West Coast Pac-12 football to winning the Big Ten?
When Nebraska joined the Big Ten, they were a co-favorite to win the league.
I was going to say that. I
They
thought there
didn't.
was something like that.
They
Yeah.
were.
Is Nebraska the closest comparison? Maybe.
Maybe, because Nebraska was coming off a 2010 season when they damn well should have won the Big 12 and they blew it. Sean Watson blew it in the Big 12 championship. And they were co-favorites. This is remember back when Wisconsin and Nebraska were not in the same division. Ohio State had just fired Jim Tressel. Wisconsin was the favorite in the leaders division, and Nebraska was the favorite in the legends division. Yep. So they were a co-favorite. They narrowly edged out Wisconsin in the Big Ten reporters poll to be the champion. And Wisconsin had just signed Russell Wilson, and none of us knew how good he was. And then what? It took like a quarter, two quarters in Madison. And it was like, yeah, Nebraska's not. It was obviously Nebraska was not going to be the best team in the Big Ten that year, but they did. They went in as a favorite. Isn't that something?
Crazy. Is there anything you guys want to talk about with basketball? Nebraska gets a big man, Andrew Morgan, out of the portal. Obviously, still a work in progress there. Anything jump out at you guys from what Fred Hoiberg and company are doing?
No, I think it's still too. I kind of prefer to when all the dust settle at the end of this thing, and then figure out what they have. But they. So I, you know, they got the two guys back. Maybe we talked about that last week. Juwan Gary and Matthews, came back. So, which is a really big deal, but yeah, I just prefer to wait.
Same here.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll know more in
All
2 weeks'
right.
time.
So let's close with just a little baseball talk. And I know I cover the team, but I'm curious when you guys see Nebraska lose a midweek game to Kansas 13-11, do you shrug that off and say, eh, crazy midweek games, or does that signal something bigger about what's going on there, do you guys think?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's. I think the pitching in the midweek. Yeah, I mean that's a lot of runs to give up, but Nebraska has the bats going too. They just either give up a couple less runs. I don't know. They. I was. I was. You know, I'm curious about this whole Creighton thing. Having this, I'm kind of intrigued by that. You know, Creighton has got the attitude going toward Nebraska, and I think Nebraska needs to get the attitude going toward them a little bit. I don't know if they just show up for that game, or I think the program needs to be in a place where they kind of have an attitude about everybody they play. So I don't know. You would know better than I about that. But that was kind of my takeaway about that game last week.
Yeah, it's, you know, you look at midweek games like this was just last night. So Nebraska loses 13 to 11. Number two Clemson lost 9-5 to USC Upstate. Number seven Duke lost 4-2 to William and Mary. And North Carolina, number 13, loses to South Carolina too. So like you have these kind of weird midweek results that do happen. I think the difference between some of those schools and Nebraska is that Nebraska doesn't have the opportunity to make those up on the weekends. Like those other schools can then come back and win a series over an SEC school or an ACC school. Whereas, you know, Nebraska's not going to get that chance. Rutgers is okay. Actually, that'll be a decent opportunity for them. But you look at the rest of their schedule and it's so-so. So that's what's going to ding it up. It feels like in the last, certainly the last couple of days, and we'll see how this week goes, that if they can't keep up the pace, then you start talking about two seed in a regional as opposed to hosting a regional. I know that's the kind of thing that's been on fans' radar, and it'd be a really cool thing to see Haymarket Park for postseason baseball, like we haven't seen since 2008. But you know, the team's still in obviously a good position to play into June for the first time in a couple of years. Sam, you've told me a couple times you felt like this week was sort of a danger week for Nebraska. They had the Kansas game. Now they're at Rutgers this weekend. Can you kind of describe kind of why you had that vibe?
Just to feel historical cycles of it's midweek, it's a couple weeks after spring break, and you got four road games, one of which is in Kansas, a team you don't play that often. And then you're going to Rutgers. It's a long trip. Like it's just you're going out to New Jersey to play baseball, and you're not going to New York City. Lord knows. I mean, we've been to Piscataway. Lord knows you're not going there. So it's kind of different going to Rutgers for people who haven't been there. It's nothing wrong with it. It's just not what you think. It's just not. It's like going to just the side of Newark or something. It's different. So very blue collar, very whatever. So, you're kind of holed up in a hotel room. So I just figure it's going to be kind of a tough deal out there. And I think Nebraska baseball just generally has had a hard time being sustainable. They have a hard time stringing together 3 or 4 weeks in a row. Every reason to go up and play and beat Creighton. Creighton has had the better of that series now for a while, not able to do it. I think that's just a situation, like Tom was talking about, Creighton wants it more. No reason for Nebraska not to want it. I think you have to know that the context that you're in as Nebraska baseball is you have to win it literally every game you can, or you're not going to get a regional because of the strength of your league. That's going to change next year. It will change. I mean, it'll get better. They will have an opportunity to make things better. USC and UCLA aren't great teams, but they'll make things better. But until then, you don't really have that luxury. So I just kind of thought they might lose two. What I meant by that is that they could go 2-2 this week or 1-3. And that isn't going to end their season, but that's kind of where I think they're at right now, and we'll see where they go.
Yeah. Interestingly, Rutgers was the team that derailed their regional hosting hopes 2 years ago. So maybe Nebraska has a long memory for that.
Maybe that's possible, I guess. And then they play Creighton, and then they play Maryland, and that's a big series next week at home. And I'm sure they're thrilled that it's at home too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And like I think it too, it's a reminder that like Nebraska, regardless of sport, has, and especially football, but in a lot of sports, has been hesitant to declare anybody else a rival. Like they stick to their process, they do their thing, and it serves, I think it generally serves you well in the long run. But like when it comes to the big games, sometimes you need that extra thing. And I think that, you know, it's just been another example of them kind of shying away from acknowledging another school as somebody who can make their season.
You know, Evan, I this is off topic a little bit, but I probably mentioned this before. Why does college baseball, why do they have midweek games? I mean, I'm not saying this because they lose last night or they win or whatever, but, you know, the other sports are basically, when you get into conference season, you're just playing conference games. Now, college basketball might have an oddball non-conference game in the middle of January, February, the TV set up. But why? Yeah, I mean, and you know, you're traveling. I mean, there's never been other sports that are basically, all those games were for the non-conference. And then you get into the conference and that's all you do. What is it about baseball? I mean, there's, whether it's major league, they play every day of the week, minor leagues, they go six in a row. It's just, what is it about baseball where you got to play all the time? Can you imagine a world where you just played on the weekends and, you know, you're able to save all your pitching? You didn't travel. You didn't have to scout and get up for another game and then come back and, I don't know. I just, no other sport does that. I don't believe where they kind of jumble up all this stuff. And, like next week, you know, the Creighton thing is big. You got Maryland, and that's a big, you know. So instead of worrying about Maryland all week, you're playing Creighton. And I just wonder, why are there too many midweek games? Like last year, a couple of times, Nebraska played Tuesday and Wednesday, and then had to get ready for Friday. I mean, what is it about midweek game? Should they have them at all? I'm just asking.
No, you're right. The 21 season was as close as we got to seeing that. Remember, it was league only, and so Nebraska only did play on the weekends. They played three or four games every weekend. They had like intra-squad scrimmages on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, so the younger guys got a chance. And maybe not coincidentally, like that was their best season because they could put their best foot forward, and like their depth or relative lack thereof wasn't on display. I liked it. I kind of liked the weekly rhythm to it. But you're right. It's like, let's play a football game on Saturday, and then on Wednesday, let's send our second team to, you know, play to scrimmage Kansas. You know, like it is goofy in a lot of ways.
I mean, but you know, the basketball, they have two games a week, but and they're all spread out usually. But I mean, every sport is different in their own way. But nobody does this in except baseball. Where you're non-conference every week, your conference, your non-conference, you know, every week is you're all jumbled up, and I just wonder, is it really worth the money? Do these schools make that much money off these things? It's not about RPI. These games don't matter RPI that much. I mean, they're kind of like about having home games. And I guess it's about revenue, but I don't know. I think a lot of the high major coaches would probably say, yeah, I don't know if we need these or not. Because of what you just said before, there were upsets last night. And upsets knock people out of regionals, and they knock people out of seeds.
That's right, which is why Nebraska's trying to play stronger. So if you lose those games, it doesn't maybe hurt as much.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, we're in the dog days of spring. For football and a little bit for baseball, but never on the Pick Six podcast. So we'll be back next week with a little bit more spring football talk, whatever's next. On the baseball side, they have another big weekend, and I'm sure something else exciting will come up as well. For Sam and Tom, I'm Evan. Thanks for listening to the Pick Six podcast, Husker fans.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.